As the 2026 PGA Tour season gets going this week in Hawaii, winning is at the heart of this exciting new episode of Musings on Golf. Along with Jenna Self, our executive producer, I am Kelly Elbin, welcoming you back and welcoming in for his first appearance as co-host, 13-time PGA Tour winner, and the 1989 Open champion, Mark Calcavecchia. And what a guest we have for you in 72-time LPGA Tour winner, 95-time worldwide winner, including 10 major championships, Annika Sorenstam. She'll be joining us in a little bit. Calc and I interviewed Annika last week, thoroughly impressed. But Calc, first of all, welcome to this new role at Musings on Golf. Really glad you could join us.
Well, thanks, Kelly. Thanks for asking me to help out and do this. It's been a lot of fun so far, and it's fun to talk about legends like Annika Sorenstam.
Yeah, I think fun's a really good word. Mark was nice enough to be on Musings on Golf a year, year and a half or so ago with Bob Bupka and me. And then just by pure coincidence, I ran into Mark last May when we were with two different groups playing golf in the UK. Mark probably vaguely remembered me as I, you know, reminded him of Musings on Golf. And then Mark Calcavecchia did one of the coolest things. You know, I was with seven other guys, and it was a cold day that day, as it will be in the UK in May. And I just said, hey, Calc, I've got these seven guys. Would you just pop into the bus for a couple of minutes and talk with these guys? Some elite golfers would say, you know what, Kelly, I got to get inside. Not Mark Calcavecchia. You went into the bus for the next 15 minutes or so, held court, answered questions. I think that's kind of part of your DNA, isn't it, Mark?
Yeah, it is. I'm not above doing something like that, unless there's some sort of emergency I got to get back to where I'm going for. But certainly that wasn't the case in Scotland, just hanging out with my buddies. So it was fun to hop on the bus and talk to everybody. I think it was kind of cool for them. And they asked me a bunch of questions, and we talked about the day and the golf that day and the wind, the conditions. So it was, you can talk all night about what goes on the golf course in Scotland over there.
No question about it. And then we both hopped around and played different courses. You had the opportunity as part of your trip to go back to Royal Troon.
Yeah.
and play with those buddies, your seven pals, on the great links that where you won the 89 Open Championship. What's it like for you, Cal, to go back to Troon, whether just with some pals or going back to play in a U.S. Open or Open Championship through the years, teaming it up again on a place that produced the most magical week of your life?
Well, it's always very cool when I get back to Royal Troon. Obviously there's a lot of stories, and I told the guys about shots I hit and where I hit it, and before we played, we walked through the clubhouse and down the hallways, and my scorecard's in there, my pitcher's in there, all kinds of cool stuff that bring back great memories. I remember the first time I played Royal Troon after I played the Open there, when the tournament wasn't there, I couldn't believe how much space there was between 1 and 18, because, normally that's covered with a, 50, 60 row high, 200 yard stretch of bleachers. So, it was pretty cool to see the space between those two holes and just the different looks that you see when you hit into the greens without the stands there. So it always super fun to go back there. And of course, I birdied 18 again. That hole loves me. I hit it close at the postage stamp. I had a few oopses, but I think I shot 71 and just had a blast that day.
Yeah, and I would imagine the guys you played with, what a treat for them to be with you and to hear all that stuff. And then there may have been a libation or two afterward to celebrate the time on the links that day.
Oh yeah, it might have been a few on the links that day too. But what was cool is I asked the staff at Royal Troon if they put the pin back left where it was on Sunday, and they said the hole had already been cut by the time they got the message, which kind of was in the middle back right, still a really good pin. Right. So anyway, they put a makeshift flag in the ground, and put a little set of another flag over in the right rough where I was at 201 yards, and we all went over there and took a lash at one where I hit it from in the playoff, and only one of us hit the green, and it wasn't me. So thankfully, I hit the right shot when I needed to 36 years ago.
Yes, you did. Hey, you know, I it had been a while since I had gone over there and played, and I was reminded just how different golf is over there, Mark, and just how much of a part of the very fabric of not just the communities, but certainly in Scotland, the country. It is in many ways so very different than what we think about when we think about golf in this country.
I mean, we love golf in this country, but I don't, not like they do over there. You know, you talk to people in pubs and, you know, you see people all over the place and it looks like they literally just got off the golf course, you know, and they all walk and they all have their trolleys or I think that's what they call their pull carts. And
that's right.
You know, and you drive down through the country and all of a sudden you'll see this golf course over to the side of the road with, you know, like 2 foot high weeds everywhere. And you see people trudging away through the rain and wind. And, it doesn't matter. If they're going to play. And they do have an amazing love for the game there.
No question about it. And speaking of love for the game, I really enjoyed our conversation with Annika Sorenstam last week. And we talked, you know, I don't think we got too into the weeds in talking with her about, you know, this tournament, that tournament, although the two of you did have, you know, a really cool discussion about, you know, the championship mindset. I mean, we talked about her growing up in Sweden. We talked about, I mean, she was a good athlete. She was a good little athlete when right. She was a kid. But Kalk, you have that tie-in with your son and Annika and Will in the PNC Championship. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that.
We, my son and I, Eric, we just got to play in one PNC, which we're very thankful we got to do it once. And it was also Annika and Will's first PNC. And he was either 8 or 9. He was little. And it's been, you know, especially watching it this year, and I watch it every year, but this year, Will and Annika, you know, they did well, and Will got a lot of TV time, and it was really cool to see how he's progressed in the 5 years since we played. He's only 14 now, but you can see how good he's getting. He's growing, he's getting stronger, he's hitting it further. It looks like his putting is just awesome. So yeah, that was very fun, and my son and I really enjoyed that. You know, I don't think he fully realized what kind of legend he was playing with that day, but you know, he does now, and he remembers that week very fondly.
Well, and Annika continues to have a big presence in the game, along with her husband Mike. They host a weekly show called Annika on Sirius XM PGA Tour Radio. They have a lot of fun with it, take questions and so forth. But Kalk, really, where she's made a huge difference is through her foundation. I mean, she's impacted a lot of girls and women, helping them, you know, enjoy the game. She hosts events. That's, I think, and I noticed that as well, having lived down here in Palm Beach County for 20 some years, and the legacy that Mr. Nicklaus and Barbara have, it goes so far beyond the playing on the golf course, Kalk. And I get the feeling Annika's kind of the same way with what she wants to leave behind and what she's doing now with her foundation.
Yeah, exactly. She's doing an amazing job, and hey, it's part of giving back to the game. And she was in a position to do that. You know, when you win 72 times and 10 majors, you know, people will listen to what you have to say and what your ideas are. And she came up with a great, great idea to help, you know, young girls and all kinds of different ways through her foundation. And yes, like you mentioned, Mr. Nicklaus, same thing, you know, with his hospitals and the Arnold Palmer hospitals. And, you know, these people just do an amazing job helping kids and giving back any way they can.
It's one of the great ways that our game is so cool that way. It isn't just the little white ball that you're chasing, Mark. It truly impacts lives.
Yes, it does. And that, you know, that's cool. And, you know, when you play in some of these other outings, you know, like the CBS Charity Classic or the Wendy's Street Tour Challenge over the years, a lot of these what they used to call silly season events. But still, when you're doing these things, you're being a part of, you know, helping raise hundreds of thousands of dollars for, you know, children's charities in that area. Or, you know, some of these tournaments donate to 50 to 100 different charities. So that's really cool that the money gets spread around and, you know, that we can actually help raise money for that. It's pretty cool.
And it's one of the great legacies of both the PGA Tour and the LPGA Tour. Speaking of the PGA Tour, after this interview with Annika, Kalk and I are going to get into the what's been a fast-moving situation with Brooks Koepka, who will now rejoin the PGA Tour, I think way sooner than a lot of people had thought. We'll talk about Vijay Singh being able to play at age 63 back on the PGA Tour, and Kalk can certainly relate to that. So we've got several things that we'll discuss, and you'll hear those right after you hear what I think is a terrific interview with Annika Sorenstam. And you'll hear that right after you hear from our corporate partners, William & Harry, Titleist, and the Friars Golf Club. America, this is your moment. William & Harry's limited edition spirit shoe is here so every fan can feel like part Team USA from the first tee to the final putt. Two head-turning designs, premium deerskin, 100% waterproof with spikeless grip and all-day comfort. Limited run, don't sit this one out. Pre-buy now at williamandharry.com. Get into spirit. Get into comfort. Golf is more than your scorecard, the brand of clubs you play, or the clothes you wear. Golf is a journey where every round is a memory, filled with friends old and new. The Friars Golf Club is where those lifelong friendships are made, on the first tee, in the 19th hole, and far beyond. Exclusive trips, unforgettable rounds, and the very best people. Indeed, great courses are simply better with great company. So join the Friars today. To learn more, email us at info@thefriars.com and put the word musings in the subject line to receive a $500 trip credit when you join. So we invite you to stop dreaming and start living the ultimate golf experience at the Friars Golf Club.
Being number one is earned. And once again, the Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X have earned the trust of the overwhelming majority of players at every level and recorded the most wins across the worldwide professional tours and amateur events. This continued dominance is validation that performance matters when it matters most. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Well, sometimes in sports, hearing the first name alone is enough to recognize greatness. And so it is with our very special guest today. She won 72 times on the LPGA Tour with 95 victories worldwide, including 10 major championships. She's a member of the World Golf Hall of Fame and is unquestionably one of the greatest women golfers of all time. She is quite simply Annika. Annika Sorenstam, on behalf of 1989 Open champion Mark Calcavecchia, we are honored to have you join us here on Musings on Golf. Thank you for your time. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me, and happy New Year, everyone. Great to be on your show.
Well, it's great to have you, and I we're going to bring Calc in just a minute, but I want to ask you, and I know you share some common things with Mark and his son, having played in the PNC a few years ago. You've obviously accomplished so much. But seeing the sheer fun that you've had with your son, Will, just back in December up at the PNC in Orlando, Annika, can you give us a sense from a family standpoint, your husband's on the bag, your daughter's following you, with everything you have accomplished, how cool that still must be to play in that event with your boy?
Yeah, no, it's super cool. And Mark knows that. It's just a different type of feeling. It's a different type of joy. It's a different, I don't know, it just like encompasses all things at once, you know, not just competition, but, you know, family. And then, I don't know, we love it so much. And as you know, Will has such a passion for the sport, and to see him, you know, just the excitement and, you know, the anticipation, and then for him to get a chance to hit balls and, you know, chip around the very best in the game. It just, I don't know, I'm just like an observer. I watch him, I see him, and I'm like, wow, this is so cool. It's happening. And, you know, certainly something we look forward to every year. And I don't know, I just so thankful that we get a chance to play.
Annika, I spent a lot of time watching it a few weeks ago, and we all got plenty of TV time, which was very cool, and rightfully so. He hit a lot of great shots, and so did you. It was great watching it. I think it's been probably 5 years already since we played together in it. Still playing a lot of golf with my son when he's not working. He's a chef, so. But anyway, that tournament, like I said, it's just we had the best time. As far as Will goes, he's 14 now. Is that right?
Yep, he is.
Yeah, he's. I can see that obviously from when he's nine or whatever he was the first time we played, how much he's improved. When you guys get ready for the tournament, what's your when do you start practicing together, or do you kind of go through the scramble format and play around like that just for the heck of it?
Well, thanks for asking, Mark. Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, we practice together all the time, you know, whether it's for PNC or just in general, we have a good time together. You know, he's starting to find some buddies now that I'm like less important. I'm not as fun as some of the other friends he has, but we do practice quite a bit together. And as far as preparation, you know, we live so close to the golf course, so we go out there and we play. And but it's fun when we are at home and we go out and play. We actually, I wouldn't say we play scramble format, but we play like, when you alternate every shot. So he would hit my tee shot, I would his, and then we just kind of put scores together that way. That way we feel like we're a team versus playing against each other. It's just, we're both so competitive, but, you know, we don't want to like beat each other. And so it, for us, this is like, okay, what's the lowest score we can do and still be friends and hang out and not, you know, have arguments in the end of the round. So that, you know, so I'm so used to playing with him and knowing his game and he knows mine. And that's just been a lot of fun. I think it's very helpful. But once we go out the golf course there, then it's like, okay, now we're in tournament mode. This is where we want to hit it. And, you know, most likely this is where, you know, we use his drive now because he is out driving me. So, which was a, you know, a nice benefit this year because we were probably up, you know, between 10 and 30 yards, which, as you know, Mark, that makes a big difference, you know, two or three clubs into the green. So, but it's just a matter of time until they're going to move him further back. But I'm going to negotiate to go further forward because, you know, I'm certainly not getting any longer. I'm going the other direction.
That'd be fun in terms of seeing him develop. I mean, you mentioned he's hitting it farther than you. He's had some rounds, obviously, where he's beating you. And you're the ultra-competitive side of you. And at the same time, being a mom and seeing your son develop, it's got to be a really kind of a fun experience to see this progress of him as a kid and as a golfer.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I am glad that I've never really just kind of give him wins or give him, you know, a chance. I give him the chance to beat me, of course, but I'm so competitive. I want him to earn it. I'm glad I just didn't like, you know, fold and make him look good and think that he beat me because now he's legitimate doing it. And it's like I said, I mean, now he's good. And that's really what I think matters. But what's really turning it around is now I'm competitive. So now I got to work to beat him because he's not going to give it to me. Right. So I'm getting my medicine back, but I think it, you know, it's really cool because it's still that, you know, we're so different as far as player goes. I mean, I'm still, and I was, as you know, very, you know, analytic, you know, statistics and fairways and greens. And, you know, maybe some people might think that's boring, but that's really how I played. You know, I look at Will and first of all, he's a lefty. So that's like the reverse already there. You know, he's all about short game. He's all about, you know, typical young boy that just likes to experiment. And, you know, when we have a tournament coming up here at the Hilton Grand Vacation here at Lake Nona, and, you know, the stands are up, you know, the bleachers, and he's out there playing and he goes with his buddies and they put the ball down. I'm sure, Mark, you did this when you grew up. You put balls in places, you know, that you would never be. Like I would just practice, you know, kind of boring back and forth. They put these balls, you know, behind a chair, behind a table, and let's see if we can make up and down. So, you know, he's bringing the youthfulness into me and being a little bit more creative. And I wish he could take some of my fairways and greens and kind of mix them together. That would be a great, you know, mixture for all of us.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, your husband Mike, his dad Jerry was a tour player. Your daughter Ava, is she part of the golfing Sorenstams? That I know she walked along with you guys as you and Will played. Is she playing golf, or if not golf, she playing other sports?
Yeah, well, she plays on the softball team, the varsity team at her high school, and the season is starting now, And as you know, golf and softball or hitting a bat is, you know, very similar, but then so opposite. But yeah, she is, you know, she actually can golf quite a bit. You know, she doesn't do the scores that Will does, but she has a lot of power. She hits it, you know, quite far. And it's one of those, like, you can see that there's a love there, but then I probably don't want to admit that I really like it. And, you know, she doesn't like to practice. She loves to play. So when we are going somewhere, you know, she will always play with us. We got a great foursome. And, you know, her attitude is a lot different than Will's. You know, she, we took her to Augusta, believe it or not, she birdied 16. So that kind of tipped Will off a little bit, of course. But, you know, then she will make a nine, but, she, you know, she just doesn't care like he does. So it's a different type of attitude. But yeah, no, she has, she's got, obviously grew up with the sport. She understands the sport. And I think she will probably do some in golf, but not, you know, not on the level that Will is by any means. That's just not her nature.
Hey, what a thrill for Mark Calcavecchi and me to be joined by the legendary Annika Sorenstam here on Musings on Golf. Calc, turn it over to you.
Annika, I also understand you had quite an interesting childhood growing up in Sweden. I understand you were a great tennis player, a great skier. How did you decide that golf was going to be your sport?
Yeah, no, probably like you, Mark, I just loved sports. I grew up playing all kinds of sports. You mentioned a few of them, and, you know, I nibbled in some other ones too. But those two, tennis and downhill skiing, was probably, I mean, things that I still love today and things I do today. I've always enjoyed both of them. But golf was, you know, our parents, my younger sister, Charlotta, and our parents would play. I mean, my mom takes all the credit. She was pregnant with me, and she told me that I felt the rhythm early, that golf was kind of this part of my life. But it was a slow introduction to the sport. I actually thought it was quite boring in the beginning, you know, a sport for old people. And I, you know, I wanted to chase something, you know, want to have a little speed on the slopes. But then, you know, the more I, you know, start hitting and realizing that this is quite a complex sport, you know, there's a lot of different shots, a lot of different situations. And I got intrigued by how difficult and challenging it was. And so the age of 12 was like, okay, well, let me just kind of give this a try. And at the age of 16, it was like, you know what, this is all I want to do. I think I was burned out in tennis. You know, I worked really hard and just really didn't make any progress. And, you know, not living on a mountain or near a mountain, it's hard to be good at, you know, downhill skiing. So I was kind of, golf was kind of it. And obviously I'm glad looking back. But that's really how, you know, I introduced early, but just kind of a slow fall in love process.
Yeah, and you hear, and certainly for kids who grew up here in the States, Annika, you hear the stories of, you know, mom or dad dropping them off in the morning and playing 18, 36 holes during the day. Once you kind of had that love for the game, was that the case with you? Were you playing as much golf as you could as many days as possible?
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind, Sweden, we're a little limited too as far as weather goes. So, I mean, in the summer, it doesn't get dark until 10, 11. So, and it gets light really, really early. So, yeah, we spend most of the days at the golf course. And, you know, at the time where I was a little bit more serious, it was, you know, I didn't have a car or a driving license because it's a little later in Sweden. But, you know, we lived within a, you know, biking distance. So we'd get there in the morning, and then I would work in the pro shop. I would pick up golf balls in the range. I mean, I would make money during the day. And then, of course, in the summers, it was, you know, we were there all day. And you know, whether it was playing soccer on the driving range that was closed, or it sounds funny, but swimming in the lakes to pick up golf balls. I mean, we were a group of 8 or 10 of us. I mean, this was the playground. I mean, there was no, you know, a place to go other than, you know, that was our club. And it was fun to have friends. And of course, most of them were boys. So it was like, you got to keep up, you know, so which was great. I mean, we played from the back tees, my sister and I, and that's, I think, how we got tough. And, you know, if we didn't keep up, you know, they didn't want to hang with us. So, but yeah, those was our summers. I mean, it was, you know, 8 in the morning to 8 at night. And that's kind of the place we were. I loved it so much. And you know, just kind of work on our different games more in a fun, you know, environment versus, you know, grinding. But I think that's really how you learn and how you become better.
Annika, I understand about nerves down the stretch of a tournament. Did I hear it right that you actually deliberately three-putted at the tournament round as a junior to avoid the victory speech. I kind of get that. A quick story. I was playing David Frost in South Africa, and he was playing out of his mind. It was blowing about 40 miles an hour, making putts everywhere, and I was about 7 down through 11 or 10. And on 11, I deliberately four-putted to make sure I lost and didn't have to play the last 7 holes, because it was about a half a mile straight uphill walk to the peak. So even back then, when I was 16, I was kind of lazy. So yeah, I kind of get that. But did you actually do that?
Yeah, I mean, I would say for different reasons, but yeah, no, right. It's true. It's funny how, you know, you've trying to find the escape route when you're facing a fear or something you don't want to do. But yeah, no, I've always been shy by nature. You know, in school, I would never really, you know, raise my hand to answer a question. I figured it was better to be quiet than, you know, make a fool of myself if I didn't know the answer. And so in golf, and as you know, I mean, some events, they always want you to give some winning remarks or, you know, just say something. And I was just terrified about that. So I figured, you know, if I finish second or third, I still get a little prize of some kind, but I don't have to give a winning speech. So, yeah, so, you know, extra little putt here, or maybe even leave it in the bunker. That looks quite natural. And a chip and a two putt, so that, you know that you're still there, but I don't have to do that. And so, yeah, but I'm sure you feel the same way. You know, when you leave, you're so disappointed in yourself. Like, you know, what a way to, you know, finish when you know inside in your heart that, you know, you could do this, right? You could win. And so, but yeah, my parents, I mean, they were just, I think they kind of saw it. They saw a pattern, and they were just like, they're wondering why, you know, why our little girl, you know, crumbling down the stretch. And so they called the tournament my following, you know, the next weekend, and said, hey, you just, whatever happens, just have Annika say something. And so you can imagine, you know, I'm standing there and you got a prize, and they were like, well, Annika, we'd like to hear from you. And I was, my first reaction was, well, I didn't win. They said, we know that, but you know, how was your week? And I was just like, you know, terrified. And then, eventually, you know, I was able to, you know, get a few words out, and it was actually a relief. It really was, like, you know what, that wasn't that bad. And so from that point on, at least, you know, I didn't win every tournament, but at least I, you know, I sat in the car home knowing that I gave my best and I didn't throw it away.
Exactly.
And sometimes, as you learn in life, when you step out of that comfort zone, Annika, it ultimately can be a good thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's how we learn. That's how we mature, right? And I mean, the first reaction, I think, is humans, is like, you know, just a defense mechanism. It's like you'd rather just kind of run and hide rather than facing your fear. And, you know, it's been a few times that I've written face the fear under the brim of my hat. You know, nobody really can see. But so, you know, I would play in a major and, you know, I mean, who doesn't get nervous in a major? I mean, everybody does, especially someday if you have a chance to win. I don't care who you are. You still feel the nerves. And, you know, so how do you handle that? And I would write face my fear, because I'm in the position I want to be, but it doesn't mean that I'm not nervous about it. And I've always felt like, you know, you got to go out there and, you know, go for it, and not, you know, the best wishes I had was really just, you know, why don't they crumble and give me the trophy? But we know that's not going to happen. So you have to go out there and fight for it. So, you know, some of those mental games to keep us sharp and keep us focused and kind of on track, I think, are quite important.
Annika, you mentioned about being shy, and you made the decision to come over as a young lady, shy as a kid, and play golf in the United States and accepted a scholarship at the University of Arizona. I've always had a lot of respect and admiration for particularly for young people who make a bold move like that and come to the States. You know, you come from a relatively small country to a big, brawny United States of America. You obviously had great success. You, what, first non-American to win the individual NCAA Division I championship, first freshman to do so. Great 2-year run there. But I'm wondering, from a personal standpoint, what was that like to go from your home country to the States? Did you miss family? Did you miss things that you were used to? And then maybe on the other side, what were the fun things that you discovered and learned?
Yeah. No, I mean, it is a big step. I mean, I didn't grow up, you know, dreaming about going to the U.S. and, you know, play college golf. First of all, because I didn't play golf. Number two, I wasn't exposed. I didn't have friends that did it. I certainly didn't know what NCAA was. I mean, living in this country, you grew up with it. You know what, you know, college and college sports are, and you probably have role models or friends that have done that. I just never did. And I did have a friend later on, you know, that got it, that went to University of Miami. And so she invited me over. And that was the first time I went to the U.S. And I got a little glimpse of what college golf could be. And then I was attending a tournament in Japan, of all places. And University of Arizona was there. And the coach, you know, she asked me to come. And I was like, well, this sounds fun, right? I mean, I get to travel all over the place. And so I really didn't, you know, I didn't look around. I wasn't in the recruiting pool or whatever you would call it. I was just, it was kind of those decisions. You're like, sure, I do that. And so, you know, this was in November, and August the following year, I was literally on a plane to Tucson. And I can't think of a place that's a lot more different than Stockholm, especially in August. And, you know, here I come with two suitcases and a golf bag, and you know, my roommate, she's got like a big U-Haul. And so it was like, it was a shock, number one. My mom, you know, when she dropped me at the airport, she told me, she goes, Annika, just remember, it's equally as far there as it is coming back. And I interpreted it as, you know what, just come back if you don't like it. And so I felt like this wasn't, you know, forever. And as you all know, I literally haven't gone home, right? I mean, I go back on trips and visit, but you know, I've stayed here ever since because it's just been amazing. I mean, for somebody overseas to come and be part of a college environment and a college team, I mean, it's hard to describe how valuable that is and how incredible it is and the opportunities that you have in this great country. And then of course, you know, once I stopped being over here, then LPGA was, you know, closer because I got to see an LPGA event, and all of a sudden you're like, you know, it's more, you know, reachable now when you're kind of in that environment. And that's when I started to dream about becoming a professional and playing against, you know, the generation at that time. It was, you know, Nancy Lopez, Pat Bradley, Betsy King, Patty Sheehan, but Daniel McMillan, you name it, the ones that they were Hall of Famers at that time. And so, yeah, so, I credit, you know, my success a lot to my college experience because, you know, if I wouldn't have done that, who knows? I started to be a chemical engineer, and I was, you know, teaching tennis on the side, and who knows where I would have been today. So yeah, it was really an instrumental part of my career.
Mark Kalkovec and I are having a terrific talk with the great Annika Sorenstam here on Musings on Golf. Kalk, turn this over to you for some great insights, some comments about what it's like to win major championships.
Annika, I know you won 10 majors. I was fortunate enough to win one. But I want to ask you about what your mindset was in majors. Did you try to treat them like any other tournament, even though they're not? When you're coming down the stretch, obviously nerves are a part of it. When I won my one major, I never thought about winning, actually, until I birdied the 72nd hole to tie Greg Norman, and I saw Wayne Grady had just bogeyed 14. So I was only one back. We were only one back at that time. Winning was never, you know, I was just trying to, I was third with three holes to go, but I was four back. So I knew I needed to birdie two of the last three, at least, to tie Greg Norman to have any chance, which I did. And then we got help from Wayne Grady, who also bogeyed 17. But anyway, in your 10 majors, were there times where you felt more relaxed than others, or were there times where it was always pretty stressful, you know, unlike regular tournaments?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And I mean, it's a fine balance, and, you know, in your mind, and it's all about, you know, trying to treat the tournament as a normal tournament. But as you know, when you get on site, it's hard because they are different, you know, for whatever reason, just kind of the course set up and just kind of the hype towards the events. But for me, it's always been about the preparation, you know, just being ready and trying to play my own game. You know, when I won my first one, you can say it was a fluke, maybe. It was, you know, 1995. I was 24, my second year on tour, and I came from behind. And just like you said, you know, I really didn't expect to win, but all of a sudden you're in the right place at the right time. And so that one, I would just say, was more just because I played steady and I was right there when I needed to be. I think what makes the major so special is because we don't have that many. So you put a lot of, you know, pressure on, now we have five, but, you know, no, it's originally just four majors. So you only have a chance like four times a year to do something special. But I always, you know, again, preparation. And I think that the key in playing majors is just you got to be patient. As you know, it's a long race. You know, the courses are, they always seem to be a little tougher, maybe a little longer, you know, firmer greens, all the things to really kind of challenge you. I would say that for the most part. And I felt like I always played better the more I played. I mean, as a matter of fact, I wish every tournament was 90 or 108 holes because I always played better the more we played. So I think that, you know, those majors fit me in the sense that I had a lot of patience and I just, you know, I didn't get caught up too much on round one, round two, and just hopefully be in position on the final day. But having said that, I've made mistakes myself, especially, you know, when I was having a good year, you come into a major and, you know, I felt I had so much confidence, you know, I was just couldn't wait to tee it off. And you start thinking about, you know, do I hold the trophy on the right? Or do I hold the trophy on the left? And all of a sudden it's like, oh, you know, that's, you know, you shoot yourself in the foot because your mind is not here and now. It's like thinking away, as you know, you got to stay in the moment. So I've learned my lesson that way too, and really try to take all the knowledge from all the events and just kind of play. But I think that's really been my strength, I guess, just being that patient and just grinding. And as you know, a lot of times in majors, you know, you don't win with 20 under par. You know, early on when I joined the tour, as a matter of fact, it would be interesting to see how true that was. But they said, you know, if you shot around par and maybe, you know, two under at that time, and we're talking, you know, early 90s, I mean, you won majors. Now, you know, the game is a little better, but it's all about being patient and grinding.
Annika, of those 10 major championships, is there one where you say, gosh, that one really stands out, or are they all kind of equal? Do you ever think that way?
I do. I mean, I would say the first one was important because, you know, it gives you confidence. It gives you like a feeling that, hey, I belong here and, you know, I can compete against the best. And as you know, confidence is so important, knowing that, you know, I turn professional and I belong here and I can do this. And so I think that's really important. I would say that the hardest one was probably in 2006. I've been struggling a bit with a neck issue and I had a playoff with Pat Hurst. And so we had to go to extra hole. And I know I said earlier, you know, I liked more holes, but that was a different experience because, you know, you play for 4 days against, you know, first you start with 144 players or 156 at the US Open. And then, you know, it comes down. But all of a sudden, like Monday playoff, it was the weirdest thing because it's two players, same venue. So everything is so big and so elaborate. And it's just like the two of us on the range and the two of us on the course. And so that was almost like a match play, even though it was, you know, we had to do strokes. So, and the reason that one stands out because of the injuries I had, it had been 10 years since I won another Open. So it was like all of a sudden it felt like I don't know if I can win another one. It's just, and then so that one, I think, and that was my last one as well. So I think that one stands out for the reasons of it was really difficult and I knew my career was coming to an end. So but I would say quickly they all mean something different and they've all come from different, you know, scenarios, and it's just been, they all have a special place for sure.
You use the word preparation a number of times in talking about major championships. So the PGA Tour offers you the opportunity to play at the Bank of America Colonial in 2003, becoming the first woman since the great Babe Didjus-Zaharias in 1945 to play a PGA Tour event. I'm wondering, from the standpoint of preparation for what turned out to be a massive event, how was your preparation different for that week going up against the guys playing a PGA Tour event versus a, quote, regular LPGA event?
Well, yeah, no, I was like, I really didn't know how do you prepare for something you've never done before? I mean, I obviously golf, I know, and playing tournaments, I know, but just the environment, I didn't know what to expect. And then, you know, I knew the course would be longer. It was going to be 7,000. They play, you know, that course is shorter than all the other tournament stops. I don't know if it's true now, but at the time it was one of the shorter courses. It was more about, you know, being precise and, you know, having course management and, you know, you couldn't really overpower that golf course. So that's why I think that course fit me, because it was a matter of hitting fairways and greens. And so the way I try to just, okay, what are the things that I know I can control and what are the things I cannot control? And one of them was just the distance, you know. So I started to play courses from that actual yardage, you know, getting used to hitting five irons or maybe at the time, I think I had a 7-wood. I don't remember exactly, but, you know, starting to having those clubs as you approach, you know, into par fours. For a fact, I would never reach a par five. So it's like, okay, you might as well just get used to hitting wedges or 9-iron into par fives, which is different than the par threes. I knew they would be long. So, you know, just that mindset of, you know, how do you play? At the time, I think the LPGA was 6,300, 6,400 maybe. So now you add another 600-700 yards. And so getting used to, you know, birdie putts will be 30 feet versus maybe 15 feet. So a few of those adjustments, I kind of thought that that would happen. But there were some things I just had no idea. I mean, I honestly, it maybe was a little bit naive when I accepted the invite because, you know, the reason obviously was to, I wanted to be a better player. I wanted to see how I can do against the very best. I wanted to push myself. I'd been number one in the world for a few years and I knew that I hadn't reached my full potential. So how do I push myself and how do I mean, I wanted to go further. I wanted to see how far I could go before I, you know, kind of reached my peak. And so that was, you know, an important thing. But it's just, it turned out to be, you know, all of a sudden everybody was engaged. Everybody was having a comment that never followed golf. And it was some people, you know, it was like women against men. And all of a sudden I was like, well, that's not really what this is about because that's a lot of pressure. I'm not here, you know, to do that. On the contrary, take it as a compliment. I want to learn, right? I want to learn from the very best. And growing up, as I mentioned earlier, I played with boys my whole life. And so and they made me better and I wanted to be better. So, but yeah, I mean, the preparation into that event, it was, you know, the practice rounds and it was a wonderful experience. I mean, as you know, I didn't make the cut, but I learned a lot. And, you know, I just look back at it many times and I talk about it, you know, I mentor many young women through the foundation. And then I talk, you know, to Will about, you know, you got to be, you know, uncomfortable and push yourself if you want to have some other results. You can't just keep doing the same thing. And everybody has to find something that, you know, motivates them. And you know, this is probably, you know, of course, winning majors, you know, tops this experience. But I want to say this is, you know, probably, you know, top three as far as, you know, looking back in a career and say this was very important. There's a great memory. And I'm glad I did it. I mean, I could easily have said no at that press conference. I could have said, no, I'm not interested. And then, you know, but then you have this part of your mind, like, I wonder what it would have been like, right? So, yeah, no, I'm thankful for that opportunity.
Yeah, and Calc, as we prepped for this, you told me you were among many guys who were really cheering her on and wanting Annika to play well that week.
Sure, and I think everybody there, everybody in the PGA Tour, was cheering for you, Annika. I don't know why I wasn't there that year. I love Colonial. I've had some good success there, a couple of close calls to winning, but I was nervous for you. But I thought you played great and really put on a heck of a performance that week. You know, and also you retired from the LPGA Tour in 2008. Did you just kind of feel it was the right time? Other things to do, your foundation, your have some kids, stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, it was, I mean, honestly, it was, I had achieved more than I ever thought I could. And I was happy. It was to the point where you know how hard it is to win out there. You know how hard it is to be out there every day in the grinding, whether it's, you know, on the range, the putting green, or in the gym and all the travel. And it's like, you need to be motivated. You need to be excited when you wake up in the morning and, you know, put on those golf shoes and go out there. You need to be fired up and you need to have goals that you're ready to tackle. And I just, you know, towards the end, it was like, I just didn't have the desire. I was maybe tired. I was like, you know, winning another tournament is not going to change my life. And it's not making me, it's not firing me up. And even, you know, winning another major is like, well, of course it would be cool, but I don't know if I want to put in the time. You know, I know what it's like. And actually I felt like I had reached my full potential. I couldn't really get any better. You know, it's just, I had reached that point where you just, and to me, it's like when you reach your goals and it's like, well, what's driving me now? And like, you know, Mark mentioned, there's other things that I was looking forward to. You know, I was going to get married. We wanted to start a family and, you know, the clock was ticking in that sense. And there were some other exciting opportunities. So it was a hard decision in a way, but then on the other hand, once I made that decision, it was like, this is kind of a relief. Like I've done what I wanted, you know, now it's not like I'm going to disappear. I want to continue to make a difference in another way. And so it's funny how you look back at those decisions. But I mean, I'm lucky that I did it on my own terms. You know, I wasn't forced out of the sport or injured and felt like I left something on the table. On the contrary, it's like, you know what, it's just time to leave. And I haven't really looked back since.
Nice.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about continuing to make a difference. The Anika Foundation, Mike, your husband sent over some information to me. Gosh, Anika, you've impacted more than 9,300 girls and young women, more than 60 countries since the foundation was started, helping develop, empower, and advance them through golf and in life. Why did you start the Anika Foundation, and what does it mean to you as you kickstarted now into 2026?
Yeah, no, I wanted to do something to say thank you. Literally, I wanted to. I mean, I knew I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for golf. I knew that. So I wanted to, you know, feel like I have a purpose and be able to share my knowledge and my passion to other young ladies. I mean, I remember growing up, and you know, you look up to certain players a lot. Many for me was actually many of the men on the European tour, because that was the only access we had. You know, we didn't have the social media, we didn't have the TV coverage. You know, I my dad got me like a prescription on, you know, Golf Digest. So once a month I would, you know, would read about, you know, golfers around the world. It was mostly, you know, American players. I know, Mark, you were in there, but I mean, who I read about. Jack Nicklaus, you know, Arnold Palmer and Gary Player, and I mean, Lee Trevino and yourself and Tom Watson, you name it, all those golf tips. I mean, that's what we were exposed to. So then, you know, there's a part of me, it's like, you know, there's growth for women's golf. There's growth for girls' golf. You know, we love it too. And so I just felt like maybe that could be my next calling in a sense. And I didn't want to leave the game. It's not like I don't like it. I just don't want to, you know, be inside the ropes and do all that. I still want to be able to influence the, you know, the next generation. And as we know, golf is a game for life, and there's so many things you can learn. So that was kind of the fundamental thoughts that I had about, like, what am I going to do? And that was invigorating. I mean, I was excited. And now, yeah, we started it in 2007. And obviously we started small with, you know, with one event, and it led up to all these different things, and it's been really, really fun, and I still enjoy it, and I get a lot of enjoyment and satisfaction out of it, and I feel like I, you know, have a lot of players to cheer for, whether it's, you know, amateur golf or European golf or LPGA golf. It's like, you know, many of these young players, you know, we've over 100 that have on the LPGA that played in one or more Anika events, so I feel like I've been around them, and you know, obviously makes you proud to see where women's golf is today and the possibilities for them.
Interesting. Anika, there are clearly a lot of changes that are going on and coming with the PGA Tour. I'm wondering what your view is on the health of your tour, of the LPGA Tour, and what do you think of so far the job that Craig Kessler's doing as he begins his first year?
Yeah, no, first of all, I mean, it's this is probably one of the hardest jobs in sports, you know, to be a female commissioner. You know, you have a lot of, as you know, a lot of sponsors to respond to, and, you know, tournament staff, players, caddies, I mean, you name it. It's I think it's a very difficult job, and especially, you know, now it's such a global sport as well. And so, but I think, you know, I've spent time with Craig quite a bit the last few months, and he's coming up with a very positive feeling. You know, I get a good vibe from him. A lot of people like him. I think he has a good approach. He's certainly super smart and have experience in the sport. So, you know, he's already made some good announcement, not just with the schedule for 2026, but also just was it the other day, you know, now they're creating a women's TGL League, another platform for the women to be seen and be heard. I think that's really what we're missing. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see. As far as the health, I think the tour is in a good place. I mean, women's sport in general, as you know, is getting a little bit of a footing, you know, because I think people are starting to realize really that they are, you know, they're quite good in what they do. And as you know, Mike, you've been around women's golf for a long time. I mean, the top players, I mean, they, it's, I think a lot of people get surprised, like, wow, they hit it, you know, they hit it quite, you know, far, but the consistency is a different type of game. I don't think you can't compare like the way that the women play is, you know, because the first thing that comes to mind is, well, how far you hit it. Well, there's, I know that we don't hit as far, but it, you know, you, it's not just the power that is what's, you know, matters. It's about getting the ball in the hole. And I think a lot of people are always like, wow, the women are so consistent, right? And it's a different type of sport. Just like you would, you mentioned men's tennis and women's tennis is not the same. But I think people are just, you know, they love the sport. And so I like to say that the tour is in a good shape. I find it interesting with players from around the world. We'll see how it, you know, what he does. I mean, I think I know the players are excited, and you know, if you have players excited, that's a good start. They're willing to do things and you know, get involved, and so I guess future would tell, but I think they're off to a good start for sure.
We are on our closing holes with the great Annika Sorenstam here on Musings on Golf. I want to ask you, you talked about TGL, and I agree with you. I think that's exciting. It's a different way to view women's golf. And there's a lot of excitement, I think, in when you have somebody like Caitlin Clark, who had such a great run at the University of Iowa, now playing the WNBA. She's played twice in your event, the Annika, driven by Gainbridge at Pelican. What do you see in the times you've been around Caitlin Clark? What could she? What's the potential there, Annika, for her to really impact girls wanting to play the game of golf?
Yeah, no, I mean, she has been a great addition to our event. You know, she's been there playing in the Pro-Am. And I mean, people love her. I mean, she's an amazing athlete. And, you know, the fans that she has built, the fan base, you know, they're following her everywhere. So when she's on the golf course, they follow. And so I think it's a good thing. And as you all know, I mean, golf is really for everyone. And so it's fun to see, you know, people that are successful in another industry come and play golf and interact with players. And I don't really think people, you know, yeah, they care a little bit what she does, but it's not. It's more about being around her, seeing an athlete, and interacting with others. And I really enjoyed my time with her. She's a very mature lady. You know, she's got a great head on her shoulders and great role model in a lot of different ways. And this year, I mean, we had some other some of her teammates out there with Sophie Cunningham and Lexi Hall. So that was kind of fun. And but again, I mean, sports bring people together. Golf bring people together. And I, you know, for her to come to us again, it just brought a lot of attention to it. And so we're very thankful for that. And hopefully she had a good time. I mean, they do have an off season and she loves to play. She played, I believe, high school golf or wanted to do anyway. And so I think it's the more we can, you know, capture that audience with others, I think it would be wonderful, because it's, you know, again, it's like we want to bring new people into the sport. If they follow it, they, you know, they might go, wow, this is a fun thing to do, and maybe I should try it.
Annika, just a few more questions. In addition to your foundation, what motivates you today? I'm guessing that seeing both Will and Ava develop has to be right at the top of your list.
Yeah. I love my role as a mom and a wife, of course. And I mean, I just feel very lucky to continue to be, you know, to have my foot in the game, whether it's through the foundation or through our family. And but, you know, I feel like I still have a lot to give back through the sport. And I like, you know, I enjoy really my mentorship role to young players. And so, I like to stay relevant. I do. But 25, I competed four times, you know, not as well as I like. It's harder at, you know, at this time in my career, I realized, because I just don't have the time to practice. And, but yeah, I mean, I like to, you know, I enjoy working out and just kind of be active in our community in different ways. And I feel very fortunate. I still have corporate partners. So I travel around the world still, whether it's, you know, through just them or the IGF, where I'm the president, where we kind of in charge of golf in the Olympics. I find that fascinating. So I have some other fun roles that I enjoy. And I'm a type A personality, if you guys didn't know. So
yes.
So it's not, you know, sitting down and doing nothing. But so golf is just kind of still part of my life. Yesterday I played 7 holes with my dad, and it's like, you know, he's 84. So it's just fun how many memories and the sport can give us all at any time.
Well, it's so true, right? And we, I was lucky a couple of months ago, I had Gary Player on just a couple of days, Annika, before he turned 90, and type A personality through and through. But for him, as you said, staying in the game, being active, right? Whatever that may mean, it's really important, right? I mean, it's not just talking about what you did in your career. It's making a difference today and still being a part of it.
I think so. And I mean, I enjoy it. I just enjoy it at a different level. It's taken me a few years to accept it. I'm sure Mark feels the same way. You know, when you leave your sport at a high level and all of a sudden it's like one of those things is like, well, what's your purpose and what are you doing? And, you know, and but if you can still accept that, you know, you're not hitting as far, you're not scoring as low, but you're still part of the game. I mean, wherever we go, I mean, you meet somebody and, you know, they want to hear, you know, how do I hit this chip shot? Or, you know, you can always inspire somebody at a different level. So you have, I think you have a purpose in that sense and contributing to the sport. And I think it's really important. I mean, I love when we, you know, do these, you know, the greats of golf when, you know, you mentioned Gary Player or Lee Trevino or whoever is there, Dave Stockton. I mean, Mark, you've been around, you know, I think it's so important that we continue the, you know, the history and the culture and with the sport because it means so much to us. But if you can, you know, kind of pay that forward, I think that's very valuable.
I agree.
Yeah. Annika, we're in our fourth year of Musings on Golf, and we like to end our show with the same question. And I'm really interested to hear your take on this. It's a pretty basic one of, you know, who would round out a dream foursome for you? Three individuals, whether they're still with us, Annika, or the deceased, who would they be? Why? Why those people? And where would you play that kind of fun, magical round?
Yeah. No, it's always... I seem to give the same answer, but I mean, if you have asked me 30 years ago, I would have a total different answer. Today is, you know, it's family and memory. So, you know, I would invite, you know, Mike, Will and Ava somewhere, probably a fun place that I hadn't been to. You know, I've always enjoyed, obviously, the top ranked courses, but, you know, I would like to go somewhere that I haven't been. And there's a lot of places I haven't been. You might think a professional golfer has been everywhere. I still have many open spots from the top 100 courses, but you know, I wouldn't be so picky. Just the four of us go out and have a good time, and that to me would probably be, you know, something, you know, I look forward to. But also, if it would be my last round of golf, that's what I would look forward to.
AnnikaFoundation.org is where you can find out so much, pretty much everything about Annika's foundation. Mikhail, I'm going to turn it over to you to thank our guest and close the show.
Annika, it's been a blast talking to you. You're just incredibly interesting and obviously one of the greatest players of all time, and really enjoyed our time together. I'm sure I'll see you down the road somewhere, maybe in Houston when I play in the Greats of Golf over there at the Woodlands or something. That hopefully I'll get invited to that someday. But anyway, great talking to you, and thanks for being on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you to both of you. And no, I enjoyed it very much. Thanks for the chat. And Mark, go and play some good golf. I know you still have it in you.
I'm trying.
Our friends at William & Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William & Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com.
Your most important shot is the one you're about to hit. And whether it's the first drive of the day, a difficult approach from a tight lie, or a bunker shot to save par, you need to know your golf ball will perform exactly the way you need it to. Superior performance on every type of shot. It's why the majority of the world's best players choose the Pro V1 or Pro V1X, and why you should too.
Is your golf life stuck in a bunker of country club hassles? Tired of the wait lists and the six-figure initiation fees? Well, at the Friars Golf Club, we take care of all of the hard work. Planning exclusive trips and unforgettable rounds on top-rated courses, so all you have to do is show up, have fun, and make lifelong friendships on the first tee, the 19th hole, and far beyond. Our terrific 2026 lineup includes international destinations like Dubai and Scandinavia, plus top domestic resorts such as Sand Valley and Black Desert, and access to some great private clubs. Join the Friars Golf Club today. Email us at info@thefriars.com, the word musings in the subject line, to receive a $500 trip credit when you join. We invite you to stop dreaming and start living the ultimate golf experience with the Friars Golf Club. Well, we thank Annika Sorenstam and her husband, Mike McGee, really for arranging what was a terrific interview. Cal, just, you know, hearing from her and the story of her life in a lot of ways, it's pretty remarkable. A little girl from Sweden who comes over here, plays collegiate golf at the University of Arizona, goes on to have incredible success, and now what she's doing through her foundation. Annika Sorenstam is just such a, for a relatively small person, she's a massive figure in the game of golf.
Yeah, she sure is. Clearly one of the all-time greats in the history of the women's game. As you said, you know, you growing up in Sweden, it's cold there. It's not there very often. So right. To be that good at golf and obviously skiing, is she was a great skier and tennis player and great all-around athlete. But, you know, I think she really decided when she wanted to come over here and go to school in America and play golf. And I'll say it worked out for her. What a, you know, to win that many times is winning's hard. It's hard today. And it was hard 30 years ago when she was winning all our tournaments. So yeah, that's quite an accomplishment for sure.
So we thank Annika very much. So Calc, let's kind of segue into the start of 2026. In addition to being my co-host, the plan is now to have you once a month throughout 2026, but you're also going to be playing a fair amount. How about an update on your schedule on PGA Tour Champions for this year?
Yeah, Kelly, I am going to play. I just re-looked at the schedule this morning. And yeah. Originally I was thinking I might play 9 to 12. Now I might play 12 to 14. But nice. I'm going to play the first five, not counting Hawaii, which I didn't get in. I needed an exemption to get in there and didn't quite get one, which is fine. It's a great place to start the year, but it's a tough trip, as we all know. Yeah. Get there, it's incredible. So, I'm going to start in Naples in mid-February, play the first five, Naples, Boca, Tucson, Newport Beach, and then the senior PGA in Sarasota, and see how it goes. And then miss a few, kind of relocate back to North Carolina for the summer. And the problem is when you get there in the summer, it's hard to leave.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? You know, yeah.
Nice, and it's just so relaxing. But there's definitely some tournaments I'm going to play in the summer and then a decent amount in the fall. So I'm looking forward to it.
You mentioned the senior PGA championship, and I think Jack Nicklaus helped sort of broker the event. That's being played over at the concession club that Jack and Tony Jacklin designed. Tremendous golf course, Mark. And I'm really anxious to see how you and your peers play that golf course. I think it's a 2 or 3 year deal. I think it's a nice move for the PGA of America to go over there.
Yeah, we're there the next 3 years. I've not played it. I've heard many things about it. It's difficult, which of course you expect it to be if they're going to have a senior PGA there. So I'm looking forward to it, though. I think I've heard it's pretty tight and you got to drive the ball well, which. You know, if I'm hitting it a little longer, I'll give myself that.
Yeah, but right.
You know, you got to keep it and play there. And I'm hitting it pretty straight, so that's the good news. So I think it might be a good fit for me, hopefully.
Hey, Cal, speaking of good fit, you talked to me. We were before we did the interview with Annika. We were chatting offline, and you were talking about that you always felt like you got off to a good start on the PGA Tour season, right? Why, whether you were playing in Hawaii or out on the west coast of the continental U.S., why? What enabled you to have good starts, win a few events out west as the season got going?
Yeah, I did. I did do well out west, winning in Phoenix three times and L.A. once, almost Tucson once, lost in a playoff there. So, and some top tens at Pebble and Torrey and whatnot. So I think a couple of reasons. I played a lot of golf, whether it was in Florida or whether I was in Arizona. We kind of split up the winters between here and there for quite a few years. But I always just I played a lot in December, so I was ready. I was fairly confident. Got some practice in. Peter Costas, who was at Greyhawk way back when, or when I worked with Butch Harmon, it was easy to fly up to Vegas and work with him. So, my swing was in good shape, and I was just excited to start the year and get off to a fast start.
Who's the best teacher that you had? You mentioned Butch. Who impacted your game? Helped to your success? Was there one instructor more than anybody else?
Well, I think Peter Costas, because he's the one that got me going in the right direction in 1984 and 85. We did a lot of work, and then I finally won in 86. So, back in the early days, before Metalwoods, which I think came in 84, when you're hitting Woodwoods and those Bellotta balls, you had to hook it to hit it anywhere, and everybody hook. And my hook was probably bigger than most, and I hooked it right into the gunk a lot of times, the garbage, weeds. Yeah. Flight snakes were, where you're not supposed to be. So the biggest difference, I think, was Peter set me up with a 7-degree metal head, extra stiff titanium driver that was nearly impossible to hook, basically. So he taught me just to aim left, release it as hard as I could, clear my left hip, and it shouldn't go left. And it didn't most of the time. And that's where I really improved. I hit a lot more fairways and kept it. If I missed it, it was just a little bit to the right, which I could play from.
That was a real game changer for you, huh?
Yeah, that was huge. And then confidence followed after that. Once you start seeing results and playing well, and I started off 86 with no status, and Monday qualified for Doral and Honda, got an exemption, qualified for the U.S. Open. Got an exemption to Hartford from Ted May. Shot 65 the last round of Shinnecock, which at that time got me into the Masters, with no status. So that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
Pulled three top tens in a row, and then ended up winning my first tournament in Abilene, Texas at the Southwest Classic in 1986. And I was off and running.
And speaking of off and running, the PGA Tour, Calc, as we look at the 2026 season, and certainly there are going to be a lot of changes under Brian Rolapp, who is now running the tour. And I think Brian has struck quickly in working with Tiger and some others with what's called the returning member program. So, and this has been fast and furious, Mark, even for the PGA Tour, which sometimes can move slowly. Brooks Koepka said goodbye to LIV Golf. And I think the feeling, Calc, was that, at some point this year that Brooks would be playing. Well, it's a lot sooner than sometime in the fall. It's going to be at Farmers in La Jolla in just a few weeks. But to get there, and it sounds like, Mark, that the tour has stood very firm and Brooks is in agreement. So let me read this here. The policy applies only to players who have won a major or the Players' Championship since 2022. And it comes with a series of restrictions meant to reinforce accountability. Under the terms, Koepka must make a $5 million charitable contribution to a tour-approved organization. He will also lose access to 2026 FedEx Cup bonus money, sponsors exemptions to the $20 million signature events, and any equity grants in the PGA Tour for 5 years. Based on his previous performance, the financial impact is estimated to be between $50 million and $85 million over that period. Now, Calc, Brooks, when he signed with LIV Golf, it with some signing bonuses and so forth, it was in the neighborhood of $100 million to $130 million, right? But he's sacrificing a lot. What does this tell you in terms of Brooks Koepka really wanting to get back on the PGA Tour? Give some perspective here, please.
Well, it tells me that Brooks wants to be relevant again. I don't like the LIV Tour. I've never watched it. I don't blame those guys one bit for going and taking the money. Brooks got a lot of money, but 3 years ago, I'm pretty sure he didn't think it turned out to be like this. I think he was probably figuring both tours would be together by now, and it would be a kind of a combination thing. I don't know, but. Obviously he was bored out there, disinterested, I'm guessing, as well. He mentioned in mid-December, I think right before Christmas, that he told Brian Rolapp that, he wanted to come back to the PGA Tour. He's leaving LIV. And then I, I tweeted yesterday. I said, wow, the returning member program, you know, that was that. I didn't see that coming. I thought Brooks might have to sit out a year.
Right.
I wouldn't have had a problem with, and he probably wouldn't either. But, you know, it's the PGA Tour, and you know, we want the best players playing it. And certainly he's a draw. I mean, he's not Scottie Scheffler, and he's not Tiger Woods and whatnot. But, you know, he's still a big draw. And, you know, I just think he wants to get back and play where he's familiar with and not go to, you know, some of these strange places that the Live Tour went and kind of just get back on the PGA Tour.
Right. And with that, in addition to the sacrifices that he's making financially, Calc, he's even admitted, look, I need to make some amends with some of the guys on tour. I mean, I need to have some talks with them. I'm wondering if you were an active player on the PGA Tour right now, how would you feel about Brooks coming back? Granted, it's been a little bit, things have toned down a bit from when Liv came on, but it was a sea change when he and some others left. How would you feel with him coming back?
You know, I'd be fine with it, quite honestly. Like I said, I never blamed any of those guys for going over there. I think Brooks is a really nice guy. And Jenna, I played a practice round with him at Carnoustie when we were there 4 or 5 years ago, and just had a blast. You know, he could have been nicer to me. So I think the guys will welcome him back. I mean, it's, you know, time heals everything. And again, nobody really blames him for doing what he did, but should he be back, you know, next month? That I don't know about, but that's for the tour to decide, not me.
And the tour has noted that, again, that this returning member program applies only to those who've won major championships or the Players' Championship since 2022.
Right.
So, Mark, the door's open for Cam Smith, the door's open for Bryson, and the door's open for John Rahm. Do you have any sense to return to the PGA Tour, that is, by what? I think by February 1st. Do you have any feel, any sense that, as to whether any of those three might say, hey, you know what? I'll join Brooks. I'm going to do this.
I'm going to say Cam Smith, no. I think he really genuinely likes it out there. I don't see him coming back. I think Bryson probably wants to, and I know Rahm does. But Rahm seems really invested in his team and Live Golf, you know, based on everything that took place towards the end of last year. So, you know, I'd like to see Bryson come back, and I think he will at some point, and I think Rahm will too, but I don't think Cam Smith will.
Let's close with what's really kind of it's not a unique situation with Vijay Singh, because you, Mark Calcavecchia, took advantage of this opportunity a few years back, but Vijay Singh at age 63 it now has status back on the PGA Tour for 1 year. Can you explain what that is, Mark, and how you took advantage of it and the number of events that you played and so forth? So Vijay's playing this week at the Sony Open under a just explain that if you would, Mark.
It's called a career money exemption. There's two of them, top 50, which you're going to take first, because, you know, when you're you're going to take that second. That's probably what he took. If you fall out of the top 25, you got to take your top 25 career exemption first before you fall out of it. I don't know that. So this is the top 50 career money exemption. So he's still in the top 50 in the career money winners of all time. So what that does is that gives him a he's fully exempt for the whole season. Now, when I did that, I played 9 tournaments. I did that when I was 52. I might have been 53. I can't remember. But, you know, it's that exemption's been there a long time, and it's not just like they come up with that one either. So, you know, that's been around, and guys know about it. You know, I think Zach Johnson's taken one, possibly. But there's another player that's taken a career money exemption as well. I can't remember who it is. But, you know, and VJ's still good. I mean, he's 63. You know, he's as good as he was when I was 53 and I took mine. You know, he'll make cuts and he'll have some good tournaments. I don't think he'll play more than 5 to 8 tournaments, be my guess, because I think he's going to mostly play in the Champions Tour. But, you know, he might just show up somewhere out of nowhere and decide he wants to play the PGA Tour that week.
What were your goals when you took that and you played in the 9 events? what was your thinking? Why did you choose to do it at that age?
Well, just because I had it and I was going to fall out if I didn't take it. And I was still, you know, young enough where I was still playing pretty good, especially on the Champions Tour. Turns out I played 9 events. I made 5 cuts right on the number, and I missed 4 cuts by 1 shot. I don't think I finished higher than 52nd in those 9 tournaments. And then that's when I realized, and I was playing pretty good. That's when I realized, hey, good, I'm done. I'm over it, you know. By PGA Tour, I'll play in another couple of Opens, you know, because I could. That was about it. And that's kind of when I knew, you know, the time was up for the PGA Tour.
Well, our time is up for this week. Calc, it's been a lot of fun. Next time that we're together, we're going to be interviewing Davis Love III for a Musings on Golf episode in February. You and Davis played on at least one Ryder Cup team, didn't you?
At least one, maybe two. Yeah. And I've known Davis since when he first came out. He was a rookie. I think he played in Atlanta, and he had this one iron that he could hit further than anybody else could hit their driver at the time. And I'll never forget that. They're like, "You believe where Davis Love's hitting this one iron?" You know, so he was one of the early bombers. Still hits it plenty far at his age. I think he's 62 or 3 as well. It'll be good talk to Davis.
Did you ever hit the one iron well?
You know, I did. I carried a one iron. When I won the Open, I had a one iron in the bag. Back then, for whatever reason, I didn't really like hitting 3 woods off the tee. So it was either a driver or a one iron for me. And that worked well for me at the Hope. There's like Indian Wells. There's a lot of one iron holes off the tee there. And you're using a ball that spun a lot and that was ballada and a lot softer. So you could actually get the thing in the air. I'd hate to try to hit a one iron now with not much clubhead speed and rock hard balls. The thing probably wouldn't get 6 feet off the ground.
Yeah, the advances in the game, it's just incredible. Hey, Calc, this has been a lot of fun. Like I said, look forward to being reunited with you when we talk with Davis in February. Enjoy the golf, get out there, and best of luck in your season debut in Naples. That's is that coming up here in January?
It's in February. It's the 13th, 14th, and 15th.
Perfect. Well, I know you'll be preparing for that. On behalf of Mark Calcavecchia and Jana Self, thanks so much for joining us here. Again, Annika and Mike McGee, we thank you for what turned out to be a terrific interview. Calc, talk to you next month.
All right, Kelly. Thank you. Enjoyed it.